This week on Lunchbox Envy, the most expensive ones cost £350 a mouthful.
John Logie Baird used them in 1928 to demonstrate the first colour television.
And Empress Isabel of Bavaria liked to bathe in their juices.
They don't grow on straw and they're not berries, but they are strawberries.
Hooray!
Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Manu and I'm here with my fellow QI elf, Jack. Hello, Jack.
Hi, Manu. How's it going?
Oh, good. Thank you.
We're also joined by food writer and chef, Rosie.
Hi. Hi. Sorry, quick question. So they're not berries. Strawberries are not berries.
Correct. They're not actually even a fruit.
Oh,
or rather,
they
are more than one fruit. Mm-hmm. So what we think of as a single strawberry, it's actually an amalgamation of fruits. Basically, the things we think are seeds, the yellow bits on the outside, mm-hmm. each one of them is an individual fruit.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So a strawberry is an aggregate accessory fruit, mm-hmm. or AAF.
I am truly mind blown. So for the purpose of the podcast today, we're going to refer to it as a fruit or a berry.
Of course. Well, no, they're not berries.
No, they're not berries.
But they're called strawberries.
Mm-hmm. Well, the difference is, so they come from a single flower with more than one ovary. That's the strawberry. Mm-hmm. And a true berry, they're grown from a single flower with just one ovary. So
right.
Not many.
Humans also not berries then.
Definitely not. We are not a berry.
Good to know. That's at least kept me grounded. So someone keeps pulling the rug out from under me every episode telling me it's not a vegetable, it's not a berry. There's no such thing as these things.
What we think of as the fruit is the fleshy bit that actually is carrying all of those tiny fruits, which we think are the seeds, like Jack said. And then inside those tiny fruits, all dotted on the outside, those are the seeds. So each fruit has a seed inside of it.
Oh my God, it's like a bloody Russian doll.
Yeah, exactly.
A fruit inside a fruit, inside a seed, inside a bloody fruit.
Mm-hmm. So we had strawberries in Europe before the famous Columbian Exchange, but they were all very small and wild and grew in forests and weren't farmed. They were actually quite popular with kings. I think probably we just know about the kings because they were written about. In the 9th century, King Charles the Simple of Franconia, I think.
Burn.
He visited a man called Julius du Berry in Antwerp.
Stop.
Ironically named because they're not berries. And Julius basically gave him a platter of ripe strawberries.
Ooh.
And the king liked them so much that he gave Julius the surname Fraise, which meant strawberry and still does.
Yeah.
Aww, very nice.
Also, they kind of look like they're wearing little green crowns.
Oh, that's so true.
Don't you think?
That is cute.
Hmm.
King Henry VIII used to use strawberry juice on his open ulcers as well.
Ugh.
I know.
Gross.
Not sure how well that works.
Not well.
They're slightly acidic, aren't they?
You hope that he threw the strawberry away after he did that. But it's King Henry VIII,
probably
so anything goes.
Yeah. Louis XIV loved strawberries in wine.
Mm.
And that's probably cracking.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Strawberries in a nice sangria.
Ooh.
Fantastic.
Pims.
Classic. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Louis XIV, he sent a spy in 1712 to go and map the Chilean coast. He was called Amédée François Fraisier.
Ooh.
Fraisier.
Do you see where I'm going here? He was a direct descendant of Julius du Barry.
Oh. Fraise.
Who was renamed Fraise, Julius du Fraise.
It honestly sounds made up, all of this
stuff.
Yeah,
it does.
Like,
it's such
crazy.
A coincidence. Mm. So Fraisier was kind of, I mean, this is nominative determinism, whether you believe it or not, mm-hmm. he was destined to discover strawberries.
Mm.
Anyway, skipping ahead a bit, he went as a spy to the Chilean coast. And when he was there, he saw enormous strawberries growing the size of hen's eggs. And so he brought some back in order to try and grow in France.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't producing any fruit. And he didn't know why. And it took a teenage botanist sensation called Antoine Duchesne.
I just convinced you're going to be like Straw de la Straw Straw.
Mr. Berry and Mr. Straw, who loved each other very much.
Oh.
No, Nicolas Duchesne, it was 1766. He was only 19 years old and he realized that strawberries are dioecious.
That
okay,
is not
what does
a
that
word.
I need to explain it. A dioecious plant has either female or male plants.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So one plant will either be female or male.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Whereas you have monoecious plants, which have both types, so they can self-pollinate.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Dioecy was known for many, many years and described, for Europeans at least, in the first time by Prospero Alpini, who noticed that the Egyptians of the 1590s were getting their date palms to kiss, the male and the females. Mm. And when you kiss the flowers together, the females would produce fruit.
Were they literally like when you're a kid and you're like playing with your dolls and you're like, kiss now with the flowers?
Anyway, Fraisier managed to bring back only female strawberries.
Oh, classic.
And so they weren't able to pollinate or bear fruit with the French varieties.
Mm.
But Duchenne worked out why, and he started to mix these female strawberries with the local male strawberries, and they crossbred and created a reliable big crop. And they're known as garden strawberries, and they're the type we eat today.
Yay.
Oh,
because previous to this time, they were all very small and wild and and not particularly, because the Chilean ones were big, but they weren't particularly tasty. So we got the best of both worlds when we started to mix them together.
Wild strawberries are delicious. Yeah. Like, they don't taste real.
They taste artificial.
Kew Gardens has a really nice page on them, and it lists some historical uses, which is so cool. So in Cornwall, apparently young girls used to rub the leaves on their faces to improve their skin.
Does it work?
I haven't tested it. They were also used as a natural laxative, and they've been fed to rabbits and guinea pigs Jack's rubbing strawberry leaves on his face.
No, don't put it back. Eat it, you gross bugger.
Continuity.
They've also been fed to rabbits and guinea pigs to treat constipation.
How would you know your rabbit was constipated? Well, I guess they do, you would know, but like...
When they go red and they swell up. I find with a lot of foods, it's amazing that like it always comes down to one individual moment or person who popularizes it in a country that has enormous cultural spread, or finds a variety that just works a lot better. And it's kind of a sliding doors moment. I think we have Monsieur Fraisier to thank for that.
Yeah.
French spy. Fraisier, the family actually moved to Scotland and then became known as Fraisier. So when you watch the sitcom Fraisier, they're actually Mr. Strawberry.
Nice. Okay.
So as we mentioned in the intro, Empress Isabel of Bavaria liked to bathe in strawberry juice. Another person who was famed for her beauty regimes and tried this was Madame Tallien. She was a prominent figure in French high society around 1800. And she was famous for her beauty regimes. And she was the one who bathed in strawberries. She squashed 22 pounds of berries for each bath.
Whoa.
That's crazy. How wasteful.
Sticky.
I know, and they must have been expensive back then.
Yeah.
Also,
you can just pop down to Sainsbury's.
I'm sure that's too acidic for a woman's pH, if you know what I mean.
I was going to go somewhere else. Like, you know how people do acid peels?
Yeah.
Maybe it is actually great. Not for your hoo-ha, but for your outside skin.
Protect the hoo-ha.
Protect the hoo-ha. Hashtag.
So let's open our first lunchbox, and that is from you today, Rosie. What have you bought for us?
You might see in front of you that you've got two different coloured milks.
I do.
And they look pink. The thing that literally struck me like a lightning bolt when we found out we were going to do this topic was that, like, I'm a basic bitch. And if you give me a packet of sweets, I'm going to ask for the red one, the strawberry one.
Okay,
I love strawberry flavour things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would say more than I love strawberries, maybe.
Oh.
Like, I gravitate to strawberries flavoured stuff, and then I'll be like, yeah, strawberries are good. Yeah.
Can I briefly blow your mind?
Yes.
If you're eating Haribo gold gummy bears, the green ones are the strawberry flavoured ones.
So random.
I know. That's wrong.
Anyway, I was just thinking about that, like artificial strawberry flavour versus the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
How is strawberry flavour created? But also, what is our perception of flavour in those instances? How do we interpret strawberry flavour artificial versus strawberry fresh? So I brought some strawberry flavoured jelly.
Ooh.
We love a little pot of jelly.
Thank you.
I brought some sweeties.
Oh my God.
Nice.
Strawberry flavour.
Oh,
we're going to do a little taste test, basically. Nice. And The milks. So basically, one of my favorite things growing up was Nesquik. For the people at home who maybe haven't tried Nesquik, it's basically like a milkshake powder. Mm. It looks like a pack of washing powder, and you can get it in chocolate, strawberry, or banana. Ugh. And I wanted to see if I could create a strawberry flavor that's natural, like a really condensed strawberry flavor. So I found a recipe written by my friend Nicola Lamb, who's an amazing food writer, for a strawberry syrup for milk. So I have made us my own strawberry milk, Nicola's strawberry milk, and I've made Nesquik. And we're going to chase them both. And this is my homemade strawberry syrup.
Oh, that looks good.
Yes. Let's try Nesquik first.
Okay.
Bottom up.
Cheers.
Oh, God, it's good. Okay, and let's try a bit of Rosie's own brand. Cheers.
Oh, my God, that's so good.
Oh, wow. That's so much better.
That's amazing.
Well, thank you to Nicola for her fabulous recipe.
Mm. Going back in for more of that one.
It is really different. Mm. I would say that the one, the non-Nesquik one, the one that's the homemade one, tastes almost like a good strawberry ice cream. Mm-hmm. No?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Separate strawberry flavor. You know it's strawberry, but you know it's not made from strawberries.
I know what it is made from.
Oh, no.
Do you?
What well, historically, it? They used to use castoreum. Castoreum is a substance secreted from the castor sacs, which are located near the anus of beavers.
Okay, that's not what I heard.
Yeah. And it was
used.
Anus.
It was used. It's actually not used very often anymore. You can find it, but it has been overtaken by cheaper artificial versions. But it was used throughout the 20th century to flavor artificial desserts with a vanilla flavor, or some beavers produce strawberry flavor, some produce raspberry. So castoreum is still listed by at least one example, the FDA, the Food Authority in America. They still list it as a natural flavor, and therefore it's still legally available. It's not been banned or anything. So legally you could find it in foods and perfumes, but it's quite rare because it's so expensive compared to the alternative. Also, there are ethical issues because milking beavers is quite labor intensive. As I said, the glands are located right next to the anus. So I don't know how comfortable it is. Maybe it's pleasurable. We can't ever know.
That's so interesting because I was doing lots of research on like flavorings, and I watched an old episode of Food Unwrapped.
Okay.
Which I don't know if you know it, but it was basically a long running documentary on Channel 4, 25 seasons, which is crazy. Breaking down industry secrets of the food that we eat every day. Mm. And they were like, what's in strawberry flavor? They went to the fruit pastels factory to sort of find out, but they were very evasive. I would say they didn't really say anything. Anyway, they also went to a biochemist who explained that basically strawberry is a kind of unicorn thing, in the sense that it contains a really high amount of volatiles, which are flavor compounds, over 350. And those are the things that like burst on your tongue when you eat a strawberry. For comparison, an apple will have 30.
Wow.
So
it's really hard to reproduce.
It's really hard to reproduce. And also they're all different things. So there's esters, furans, terpenes, alcohols, aldehydes, ketones, and sulfur compounds. Basically, when a biochemist in food manufacturing needs to create a flavor, they have to use a cocktail of different components and things to get there. And to really accurately mimic strawberry flavor, they'd potentially need to use 200 to 300 different things.
Wow.
But for something strawberry-like, as it were, you'd only need to use 5 or 6 things, basically.
Cool.
And the reason why they know this is because biochemists have sort of distilled what are the 5 main flavor sort of elements to strawberries.
Okay.
They worked out that there are 5 basic sensory impressions of strawberries. Caramel.
Ooh.
Fruity. Green.
What is green?
Good question.
Green taste.
Green. It tastes like green.
It's like in, have you seen Blackadder when they try and make gold and then they just make green?
I'm going to say green is like a grassy vegetal flavor.
Okay, so in wine, it's like piney, fresh.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
Okay.
Lactone-like, so milky.
Ooh.
And buttery. So kind of like fatty, I would describe that as. So in the Food Unwrapped episode, this biochemist takes the presenter and they make a strawberry flavor blend, not using anything from strawberries to make it. So what they use are 5 things:
furanyl,
which is made from cooking down sugar. Cis-3-hexanol, which is distilled.
That's my favorite hexanol. Yes,
I know, cis-3, distilled from boiled peppermint oils.
Okay.
Ethybutyrate, made from the fermentation of dairy products.
Ooh.
Okay, so cheesy.
Alactone, made from the fermentation of castor oil, and it's a compound that's also found in peach. And then 2-methylbutyric acid occurs naturally in beer and tobacco.
Nice.
2-methylbutyric acid is my favorite music genre.
All this to say, even if you buy something that says all natural flavors, that doesn't mean they are natural flavors from the food you are actually trying
to
eat.
That's so good, because the FDA have labeled castoreum all natural because it comes from a beaver. It's never touched a strawberry.
Exactly. So basically, natural flavors can come from any food source. Mm-hmm. You can get, for example, orange oil from orange peel, and that will give you an orange flavor. Okay. You can also get ethyl butyrate from dairy products, and it tastes sweet and fruity. It doesn't taste like dairy.
In my mind, everything ultimately comes from nature.
Right. Well,
including plastic. We make it out of oil, which comes from, you know, fossilized dinosaurs and trees, which were natural. They're all growing at some point. Yeah. I don't know. So like the circle of life with all the molecules get recycled. Where's the line? I mean,
exactly. Well, I think that's a really good question, because like the examples I have here, so natural flavors can come from any food source. And then an artificial flavor is basically characterized as something that's been derived from a non-food ingredient.
Okay.
And it's chemically processed. For example, wood pulp, chemically processed wood pulp, will end up tasting like vanilla.
Oh.
It has vanillin in it, which is the compound of vanilla flavor. So that's often used in artificial vanilla flavoring.
What if it's wood pulp from an apple tree?
Well.
Is that a food source? It's a food source for beavers.
But you don't eat
coming
the
back
tree.
To beavers again.
You don't eat the tree. I mean, it's a really interesting question. Yeah, where is the line?
Like, I'm being philosophical and facetious as well.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's so interesting because I think lots of people get very hung up on like natural flavorings versus artificial flavorings. And you could be eating something that is quote unquote, all naturally flavored, but none of those flavors could come from the original thing that you think it does, like strawberries. And what's more, one of those all natural flavorings does come from milk. So where's the sort of conscience there around like vegans and vegetarians, and like what if one of these all natural flavorings comes from a beaver's ass? Like what are we going to do about that?
It reminds me of when the UK's currency turned plastic, and then about a week later everyone was like, these fibers have beef tallow in the ingredients. And then someone sat down and worked out exactly how many cows it would take to create like the 50 million banknotes in the UK. And it was about half of one cow.
Oh, really?
So they are technically not vegan, but like really tiny amounts.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, animal products appear in a lot more places than we realize.
Surprising.
I think there's just also like a consumer perception of artificial strawberry flavor, which is so different to the fresh strawberry flavor, right? So like try a fresh strawberry now that you've been eating all this artificial. It's really different. It's delicious.
Pretty damn good.
But I can understand like kids, babies have tried strawberry yogurt and strawberry whatever else before they've tried a natural strawberry.
Yes, that's so true.
And then they suddenly try a strawberry and they're like, hang on a second, that's not that. That's not strawberry. Like that doesn't taste right. And it's because the artificial flavor is similar, but not the same at all.
Yeah, it's the same with tomatoes.
Yeah. I also think nostalgia is probably one of the reasons why I love the artificial strawberry flavor so much, because it makes me think of like those times when I was given sweets or Nesquik or, you know, a delicious strawberry yogurt. Strawberry lace, anyone, by the way? I had a look at the ingredients of these. Mm-hmm. It contains apple, pumpkin, radish, and tomato.
Well, in the actual.
Told you it wasn't strawberry.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like half of them are vegetables. When you look at the ingredients of shop bought smoothies, it's like 60% apple juice.
Yeah.
Because it's the cheapest juice. And then they just flavor it with other things. So there.
Just as a little side note on Nesquik, Nestle changed the recipe of Nesquik strawberry and banana last year.
No way.
Without telling anyone, they basically swapped the maltodextrin for rice flour. Maltodextrin is a white powder that's made from starch. It's used in an additive in loads and loads of foods. Apparently Nestle changed it because people prefer simpler ingredient lists. Whoa. So obviously reading the words rice flour makes more sense than maltodextrin. The problem was when you made Nesquik with your rice flour compound version, there was just basically like a sludge at the bottom that was separating out. Ugh. Sediment, exactly. Mm. And it wasn't emulsifying. Mm. So they had to, after thousands of complaints, switch it back. Mm. And luckily, I checked the back of this.
Oh,
it's a lovely multi-D.
That's a kidney story.
Nice.
Let's get on to our next lunchbox, and that is you, Jack.
I brought you a nice bowl of strawberry ketchup.
Oh, ooh. Heaven.
I did wonder what sort of savoury dishes might be available for strawberries, because they're such an archetypal sweet. There's endless sweet recipes for puddings and desserts, and strawberry milkshake and strawberry ice cream and strawberry cake. And I found a restaurant called Amazonico, and they basically make dishes from South America. And I thought, the strawberry wheat is half Chilean. Mm. And therefore, a good tribute to use Amazonico's recipe for what is basically strawberry ketchup.
Nice.
Right.
And so I want to taste it with some pork crackling. That's okay.
Oh, damn.
Do you know what? This is a huge treat, Jack. Thank you so much.
I'm very excited.
Oh, no, my pleasure.
I feel like I'm in a small plates restaurant in Dalston. My pork crackling has a little tattoo on it that says number two.
No way, does it?
That's okay. That just means it was pig number two.
Pig number two's daughters, if you're listening. Mummy's very tasty.
Okay, I'm dipping. Very good.
Not bad.
Oh, it's spicy.
A bit of a kick.
Really good. The crackling is really good.
Thank you.
That's sensational. Pork and fruit are always really good together.
I thought that.
Like a great combo. I'm definitely getting like that sort of caramelly, toasty strawberry flavour again. That would be so good on a bacon sandwich.
Yeah. We'll put the recipe up on the website. And yes, it's a tribute to Fraisier that I use these, a South American recipe. But I basically wanted to talk to you about how strawberries are basically quite princessy in the way that they grow. So they're very delicate. You'll notice they're always packaged in hard plastic. You don't see them loose like you do with oranges, which have their natural barrier to the outside. So they're quite easy to squash. And also, that means you have to harvest them by hand, which is obviously quite labor intensive, and they're very sensitive. They also only grow in summer. And the way that you end up seeing strawberries in your supermarket, even during our winter, is because they've aligned the supply chains at certain times of the year. We'll get fruit from China or the US, Florida and California in particular. And then Europe has its go. And then South Africa has them in winter. And so the strawberry you're eating at any time might have come from thousands of miles away, and it's always picked fresh. You can't do what you do with apples, where you keep them in a warehouse in a controlled environment for months and months and months. And therefore, they have always been picked within 1 or 2 days.
Whoa.
So it's quite amazing. They are still quite expensive, but relative to all the effort that goes in, I think they're very cheap.
And they also spoil really quickly because they're highly acidic.
They
right?
do.
Oh, yeah. Is that why they break down and go mushy?
Yeah.
Which makes them good for jams or ketchups.
Mm.
Other reasons strawberries are agriculturally tricky is they take a lot of pesticides. And often you actually fumigate whole fields and greenhouses because they're very susceptible to pests, given that they've got such thin, fleshy skin.
Yeah, and shitloads of fruit on the outside of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the fruit's all on the outside, isn't it?
Yeah.
Unlike an orange.
Yeah, they are basically the inside-out fruit, aren't they?
Oh, they are, aren't they? For this research, I watched quite a few people de-seeding or defruiting a strawberry.
Really?
It's like an ASMR trend.
You did this with rice, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
How the hell do they do it? With the eye of a bloody needle?
With tweezers.
Right.
Takes ages.
Yeah, I bet it does. I mean, they're so tiny.
There's an organization called the Environmental Working Group, which comes up with a list of, they call it the Dirty Dozen, the produce with the most pesticide residue.
Right.
And strawberries, unfortunately, are on them. They often top the list, in fact. Tests in recent years found that 99% of non-organic strawberries have detectable pesticide residue. So do make sure you wash them before you eat them. did you wash these raisins?
Alex put those in that bowl.
Oh, don't be blaming producer Alex.
The bruising easily thing is referenced in the Taiwanese word, which literally translates to the strawberry generation. And it refers to all the people born after 1981. It's basically their equivalent of all you soft millennials.
Oh, like snowflakes.
Yeah, like snowflakes. Oh. This was first used in 2007. So it just seemed like every generation thinks that the younger generation is soft.
Mm-hmm. We know they're not berries now, but I'm just wondering where the name comes from, because it's in the name. And straw as well. Like, what have they got to do with straw?
Mm.
Well, there's a theory that it's not anything to do with the straw, like dried grass. Mm-hmm. It's more that they're strewn, because they have a very strange way of propagating and growing.
Right.
They send little runners out called stolons.
Mm-hmm.
And then the runners plant themselves into the soil and then grow whole new strawberry plants. So basically you look at a field, because they don't grow very high either, and they'd be known as strewn berries. Because they're strewn all around the place. And that's the best theory we have.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, in German, and I think Dutch, they're known as Erdbeere, which means earthberries, because they don't, like I said, they don't grow very high. They're very close to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'd find them even touching the soil.
So I like that one better. Mm. It's cute.
Have you guys ever had a pine berry?
No. Have you?
I have.
Oh,
yeah.
How are they?
Surreal. Because it's a pine berry. It looks like a white strawberry, basically, but it tastes like pineapple. It's exactly like pineapple.
Serious?
Yeah, it's very strange. The other thing I've tried recently is a strawsberry, which is a hybrid of a strawberry and a raspberry.
Wait, isn't that in Pokemon?
Oh, is it good?
Yeah, really good. Quite surreal, again, but like not as deceiving as eating a pine berry is. Like you eat a pine berry and you're like, that's pineapple. And then you're like, no, it isn't.
Oh,
whereas a strawberry is kind of just like berry flavor.
Does it look like a raspberry or a strawberry or a mix of both?
It looks like a small matte strawberry.
Okay.
And it's slightly softer flesh, like a raspberry.
Wow.
Spooky.
Mm.
On to our final lunchbox, and that is mine. I have brought a sexy strawberry.
Wow.
Yes.
I've cut one in half so you can see the cross section.
I think that's very yoni.
It's very yonic. Yeah. So yonic is like the female version of phallic. So it's very vulva-esque.
That's something I didn't know.
There are other reasons that strawberries are sexy, which is what I wanted to talk to you about today. So for a really long time, they've been associated with the Roman goddess Venus because of their heart shape and their red color and their purported aphrodisiac qualities. Ooh. So it's another food that people thought was an aphrodisiac.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of their shape, the heart shape, we didn't associate the heart shape with romantic love until like the 13th or 14th century, obviously like long after the myth of Venus was about. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure it's yonic. It is that vulva shape.
Yeah.
Obviously red is in Western countries linked to lust and desire. We flush when we're like excited or aroused.
Red lips, berry kiss.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And yeah, there's a lot of kind of European folk tradition around strawberries and love and sex. So, you know, sometimes strawberries grow together. There's like a double strawberry.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So there's an idea that if you broke that strawberry in half and you fed it to a member of the opposite sex or anyone you had a crush on, they would fall in love with you.
Worth a try. Anyone on the apps today?
It's not working.
Peel them off. Go and get a couple of mutated strawberries.
Mutated strawberries are great name for a date.
And in medieval France, newlyweds were fed like this aphrodisiac soup, which was a mixture of strawberries and borage, which is an edible flower that tastes like honey.
Doesn't sound very sexy.
It doesn't.
No, borage is really delicious.
No, I'm sure, but it's not sexy as a word.
This is not a great word. No, it sounds like porridge.
This is a terrible name. So borage was used to cure melancholy. So it had this kind of like happiness vibe. So that, strawberries and sour cream, all mushed up, given to newlyweds, and they're like, go. bring forth life.
Yeah.
So yeah, big, big fertility symbol. So one of the best things I read was that posh Victorian women wouldn't eat them because they were way too sexy. Like the association was too strong. What I did find was this incredible painting done by a Dutch artist called Hieronymus Bosch.
Oh yeah, I know the guy.
What a great name.
Yeah. Really good. So he was working in the 15th century in the Netherlands, and he painted a triptych called The Garden of Earthly Delights.
I've heard of that.
It is the most batshit crazy painting you have ever seen.
Imagine like Where's Wally, but medieval apocalypse. So there's monsters and like enormous fruit, which I'm sure you're getting onto. Is this the one with the medieval butt music? There's one section where there's a small naked man lying on his front and there's sheet music written on his bum. There was a woman who zoomed in and then like worked out how you would play this. And she called it medieval butt music.
Oh, so
and you can listen to it on YouTube.
Is it good?
No, it's small. There's only so much you can write on a man's bum. Anyway, where were you?
It's an incredible painting in three parts. You have on the left, there's the Garden of Eden, Jesus, Adam and Eve. It's like pretty nice looking, still a bit phallic in the background. There's like a fountain that looks like a penis. There's a giraffe. But it's pretty straightforward. And then on the right hand side, it's like hell, crazy space age stuff. There's like giant ears and a pig dressed as a nun.
Wow.
You don't want to be on that side. The side.
I do.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you don't want to be on the right.
But the middle of this painting is
centrist dance.
Oh, it's a scene that's supposed to depict like the kind of earthly, kind of sexy paradise of love, like the idea of God's mandate to like go forth and multiply, like have loads of kids. So that is the focus of the central painting, and there are so many strawberries in it.
Really?
Like, so many. There's like one scene where there's a group of people sat in a circle underneath a giant strawberry, like the size of a house. There's people riding giant strawberries, little berries everywhere. It's very strawberry forward.
I suppose there is one word that comes to mind when I think of a strawberry, which is one of your favourite words, Manu.
Moist.
Fecund.
Oh, oh, it is a fecund fruit.
It's very fecund.
There we go. Everyone loves a sexy strawberry, and there is no evidence that they're an aphrodisiac. But the association is still really strong.
I didn't know they had such a rich history of... because there's lots of fruits that are used as like casual euphemisms for a woman's genitals. I do think fruit is defined as the ripened ovary of a plant. It's basically the plant's genitals.
And also in like, well, certainly romance languages, they're all feminine in the gender terms in the language. Mm. So like la fresa, la fragola, la fraise, for the French, Spanish and Italian speakers out there. Lovely feminine urge.
Do you find it weird that strawberries are often marketed, at least in this country, as pick your own?
Oh,
have you ever done this?
It's the weird paying to do your own work.
Exactly. I don't know how farmers have got away with it. It's so cheeky. I mean, fair enough. They're always on very tight margins and it's a hard job to do. But like, fair play to them that they've like managed to get us to pick our own and think it's a treat.
Well, it reminds me of the Betty Crocker thing of like adding eggs to a cake mix.
True.
Like,
yeah.
You get that psychological benefit of picking your own fruit and veg because you're just like, gosh, how bucolic of me. I'm out here picking my strawberries. I could be Heidi, you know.
Also, you think you're picking the best one as well in my
head.
You're like, oh, this bad boy.
I would probably go and pick my own strawberries and genuinely give myself a pat on the back at the end of the day for the hard work I've done.
These days, it's a luxury experience that you actually pay a premium for to pick your own. But it started off as a money-making scheme for both sides, so the customer and the farmer. It was in the Great Depression in America in the 1930s because you cut out the labor costs and the middleman. So they were popularized, in fact, by a farmer couple called Charlie and Bertha Rice in Massachusetts.
Aww.
They were one of the first to organize these pick your own. Their farm was named the Rice Fruit Farm.
I was going to say, it's like the opposite of nominative determinism.
Yeah, it was an efficient model and people seem to like it. And these days in Japan, it's marketed as a luxury experience and you can take Instagram photos. They've set up lovely vistas.
Have you ever seen the like $50 packs of the most perfect strawberries in Japan and Korea that they love, like, that incredibly perfect fruit that tastes amazing, and you really go to town, and it's like a gift that you give people, like, the best fucking strawberries that the money can buy. Here they are.
We mentioned in the introduction, poor Hollywood went to taste that really expensive £350
strawberry.
£350,
that's
so much more. For a single strawberry.
God.
It was called the Bijin Hime, which is beautiful princess in Japanese.
They are princesses.
But they're massive. They're like the size of a billiard ball. And he just...
What's the size of a billiard ball? For
Like a pool table ball.
Okay, so still not bigger than a human hand.
No.
Like the size of a kangaroo's gallbladder.
Yeah, exactly.
Shut up.
Yeah, Hollywood, when he ate it, he described it as like a strawberry meets a grape meets roses. It's a very floral, which is pretty cool.
I actually don't think I'd like a very floral flavored strawberry.
They are a member of the Rose family, of course.
Are they? Makes sense. Yeah, I when I was watching Food Unwrapped, a lot of the strawberry plants that they were looking at had really pretty flowers on them.
Nice.
Yes, they are pretty, aren't they?
And edible and as well.
Are they? Wow. Yeah. So you can make a whole dish.
One day we should do a party where we eat all the food that we've said is edible on this podcast and just see if we like it or not.
One of us would die, I reckon.
Definitely.
Yeah, do we all know CPR?
The person who eats the beaver's anal glands is dying.
That is it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
Yes, and you can also get in touch via email. If you send us your facts, recipes, and questions, the email address is lunchbox@qi.com.
Rosie, do you have any strawberry recipes in your new book?
Well, it's not a strawberry-focused recipe, but I have a trifle in my book.
Oh, I love a trifle.
I love trifle, and strawberries are a very big part of it, I think.
Jelly or no?
Jelly made with frozen and fresh berries, including strawberries, and then cut up strawberries, as well as tin fruit.
Oh,
I do like a bit of both in my trifle.
Nice twist.
And we'll leave you with this from 17th century English writer William Butler. Doubtless God could have made a better berry, but doubtless God never did.
Because they're not berries.
Exactly. You idiot, William Butler. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, Rosie McKean, and me, Manu Oreo. It was mixed by Liang Lee and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.